so I guess we might as well get going. As I said before, I don't think there's very many of us here today, so you're welcome to come up to the table if you'd like, everyone.
So. It's a thrill.
Oh, another district president, so you and I can sit back here and make snide remarks together. It's a beautiful show.
About cities?
Yeah.
We'd never do that.
Ed Bowler's on the phone, and it looks like John Hiskey's here for Cameron.
Yes.
Paul's here for Polina. And so I think we have 8 of the 9 committee members here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So the only one we're missing is Representative Coleman, which I guess this might have not been a great time for her.
They have something going up at the Capitol.
Yeah.
Something about appropriating money.
Just in my garage.
It's not coming to me, so I don't care.
So, and I did put handouts on the back.
Yeah, thank you.
3 chairs. If you don't have those, you're welcome to get them. The agenda today, we didn't make it through Fred Simonson's proposal last meeting, so I thought we probably ought to go through that to start off this meeting. And I made copies of that. They're back there. I guess you'll have to look on the website and get that, okay, Ed?
Yes.
Okay.
Ed's probably memorized it.
So Fred had made some several proposals. He suggested that we modify Section 2 of Section 10.8.14, which talks about selling surplus capacity or product. And in his proposal, he suggested that we take out that provision, since the Constitution was going to make it permissible to sell product outside your municipality as long as you...
It modifies the term, but the boundaries are. But I don't know that it makes sense to take it out, because what if a city designated a service area that went out to, say, I'll just throw out a number, like 4500 South, that's all they said was their service area, but then they still had surplus. They still might want to sell that outside that designated service area, so I'm not sure we want to eliminate it.
But I think the distinction, at least in my mind, I was making the distinction between you define the service area, which becomes the basis for that equal treatment,
right,
that transparency, and then to me that the second part would be this, the truly surplus, kind of like on a wholesale basis, or that individual who's not treated as a customer but only as someone who's receiving a commodity of water under a party-to-party.
Well, that was one question I had, because it seems to me the issue that we haven't really looked at, and this is the definition Paulina was talking about, is this concept. I think we all seem to understand that when we're talking about the water, the surplus, in the service area, we're talking about retail water. Is that correct? Is that what the city's understanding is? That when you have a service area and you designate it, that's basically going to be retail service within that area?
As opposed to wholesale? Service area?
In the service area, the designated service area.
That's how I think about it.
I think that's been the assumption, but I thought I might as well ask it.
I think that's the assumption. The other concept that's noted here is the city's ability to enter into a wholesale agreement to provide water.
I think in general, yes, it's probably going to be retail, but I don't think it's necessarily, you know, prohibited. There may be one or two exceptions, you know, that come out.
But I do think you still might provide some retail service outside your designated service.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And that's going to be surplus water. It's not going to have the same. You're not going to treat it the same as the water, and you won't necessarily have the same agreement with those users, even though they're retail customers, that you do with the retail customers inside of your service area.
But wouldn't you just simply expand your service area at that point?
Not necessarily, because...
That would be the reason not to.
Well,
I can give one example where on 94 South, we had about 10 customers on the Jordan Valley system. It's right between the border of White City Water and Sandy City. And if you had you know, those individuals, we have agreements with Jordan Valley and with White City to, when someone needs service, to connect them up to the system that's, and we define some orders as best method efficiency. So that customer didn't have the same, I don't want to speak for you, Richard and Alan, but they're treated a little differently because you simply said, hey, White City and Sandy, we're decommissioning that pipeline. We need these customers to land somewhere. And I think by making them, giving them rights of treatment, I'm not an attorney, but I would guess there's, they might say, wait, we don't want to, we want you to keep getting service from Jordan Valley, sort of thing.
Well, the customers would prefer to have stayed in Jordan Valley, but something about $1 million bill or something. Yeah. Fix a pipe.
I don't know if that answers that question, but that's
but
the question
there
that comes
may
out
be
of my mind.
It seems to me, in my mind, where you might provide service outside your service area to retail service, it might be because of timing. Inside your service area is going to be a perpetual right, and everyone's going to be treated the same. You may have some legitimate surplus water that maybe falls within your 40-year plan that you can't use right now, and you may end up, you know, by contract or otherwise, providing that water outside for a set period of time,
I think,
or a transitional period.
Were along your pipeline at Jordan Valley before White City or Sandy kind of grew up next to them and could provide service.
So I'm just saying I don't think we can eliminate the concept
right.
of the surplus product, you know, that Fred has in this thing. I think it certainly can be modified and should be modified to recognize that with the constitutional change we'll be looking at a service area. And hopefully it would be lessened. So it would be the exception, not the rule.
But if you need the ability to serve outside your service area, which I'm not arguing against that, but if you do that, does that then remove the impetus to expand your service area?
No.
And make it easier for a city to say, well, we're not going to do that. It's too much trouble. Leave it the way it is.
I don't think so, because I think the impetus, the only thing that's driving it now is legislators and customers wanting representation. You're going to have that same pressure anytime you provide water outside a designated service area, because they won't have the same protections and other things. And so consequently, I would deem it as an exception, something you would do reluctantly, I would think. But it may be necessary on occasion. I think you have a question over there.
I do. It's related to, if you're providing a service outside the service area, is there an implication that you're doing that sort of at your discretion? And is there also an implication that there's other services available? In other words, yeah, you're gonna sell this product outside, but that's up to the customer on whether they want to buy it, because they have other potential suppliers of that water.
It could be that. It could be just by nature of contract.
Well, that's the problem, though. It's in the service area. It's a requirement that they provide service and permanently provide that service. If you've got a monopoly of the water outside that service area, you end up basically being the same thing as what you are inside the service area. De facto, it seems to me. I mean, obviously the contract law and all that is different, but as far as the consumer is concerned, there's no real difference there. And if you're not bound by some kind of oversight by a public service commission or anything like that, it's just ripe for abuse.
Well, that gets into the other issues. I think the concept is, historically, the cities have provided some service to areas, and just because they were the only source of water that expanded. But then you have contracts. See, I think contract is the other big issue. And I think parties have to be free to contract. Cities have to be free to enter into contracts, to either let their water rights be used or to provide wholesale service. And the customer's remedy then is under the contract. And if they don't, if the city doesn't have a contract, they better find one.
And the city might offer somebody to take it or leave a deal outside of their service area, and the customer is going to have to decide if they want to take that or not. I mean, as uncomfortable as that is.
Yeah, but that's not That's not the way utilities usually operate. Utilities are given monopolies under, you know, it's not just open free market capitalism because you have a contract when you are a utility and you have a monopoly on that product.
A city is not a utility.
It's controlled by the PSC. That's how that is controlled.
A city is not a utility, and it does not have an obligation under the law to provide services to any specific group of people. That's just the way it is. And right? I mean, that just is what it is. And as, like I said, it might be uncomfortable, but they're not the same animal.
I realize that.
So, you know, Boyd, as we think about what we're here trying to solve, it always helps to figure out what is the problem we're trying to solve. And I think the two major problems we're trying to solve is water supply that a homeowner business can have confidence in that'll be perpetual. And we decided that was the top priority. And the second priority, on that first one, and what happens to customers who are not in the city boundaries? What can they count on? That's our top priority problem to solve. The second problem is to provide equity and participation voice in the process of water rate setting. As I look at these changes that Fred has done, he deals with both those issues. On the first issue, it seems to me that that the concept of that we need to give cities expanded authority beyond their city boundaries. And it seems to me that the concept of a designated service area that's carefully thought out by a city and adopted through its legislative process formally, that's the answer for retail customers outside of city boundaries. If they're in the designated service areas, if we make this recommendation, they can count on perpetual water supply, just like the residents inside the city. We need to leave the city the option of establishing other contracts outside of its designated service area. For whatever reason, a city may have a surplus water right that will yield for the next 20 years, and then it'll be gone. A development may need additional water supply for a fixed term, and then it has an agreement 10 years from now with the city to provide a perpetual supply through its service area, whatever. To me, this works in answering both those problems that we're trying to work
through. The difficulty is, if you read Fred's language at the very beginning, 14A, he actually says, except as provided in this subsection 14, a municipality may not sell or supply water to a designated service area to be located beyond this municipality. And he's basically saying you have to go with 14, and he's basically restricting it to the service area.
Well, and that doesn't even fit with the constitutional amendment.
But I think he was attempting to where it is. So one thing I think we have to say on the language is we need to modify the language to recognize that there's going to be the designated service area. And then my own view is if you're looking at retail service, if a city's providing water outside the its designated service area, they need to have some type of contract out there, something that the customer can look to for protection.
Outside
the designated service area. There's got to be some remedy out there, but I don't know.
May I interrupt? I apologize.
Sure, Tom.
Got a call from my wife. She's at a soccer game with my grandson, 97 degrees, and locked her keys in the car.
Oh. She needs some help.
Please. So I'm going to call upon Lynn Pace to come up and proper her.
Oh, there you go.
And I apologize.
I don't have keys your car.
I apologize.
That's okay.
I hope you understand. I can't leave her out there.
Yeah. No, don't leave her out there.
Don't help your neighbor be snow blowing, okay? But I don't understand the city's plans, guys, because I don't represent any city water system. Do you? That's why I was interested to see if Salt Lake was here. Because does Salt Lake have contracts to provide water, retail water service, outside its designated service area? Do you know, Lynn?
What we're talking about as a designated service area is essentially what Salt Lake City has de facto been doing on the east bench of Salt Lake County.
Right.
So it's not, that's not what it's labeled, because that's a term we've come up with just recently.
Right.
But they don't have contracts. We just provide them.
Yeah, in that within the designated service area, which is fine.
Right. Now, you might have someone up one of the canyons who is receiving water. Those are per contract.
Okay,
they are surplus water.
So they do have contracts.
Yes.
So
that's my understanding.
So it seems to me what we would do on this language, however we deal with it, would be to modify it such that if they are providing a surplus supply outside the designated service area, it needs to be done by contract if it's a retail service. And you can leave that by contract. It can be just left that vague. You don't have to spell out the details of the contract. That's between the parties to negotiate.
I like that language quite a bit. It leaves that flexibility for cities to both enter into contracts seeking surplus water from others or otherwise, but also best manage their resources. And doesn't you define the service area for that? Those that have equal treatment in terms of I'm across the street and I'm in the city versus not in the city, but I'm not getting my water shut off, but yet I'm someone that's a mile away from any other service, and they're not in the city. They can end up with, as Lynn mentioned, an individual contract to say, well, there is an option for you. Rather than you spending $80,000 to drill your own well, you can connect. Here's the conditions for that. I think there's a question that I think maybe Mr. Henderson or even Representative Coleman might bring up, is if I have a home and I've built it away from the municipality that is providing my water supply, is there a limit on the city saying we're only going to give you a contract for that house if it has a clause that says I can pull it out from underneath you? And I think my understanding, which may be incorrect, is that some of those contracts, I think all look to the attorneys, you know, a contract defines, is it perpetual forever or does it have a term? And I think the practice has been just to put in a term that says it could be dissolved.
There's always
I think that's because they didn't feel like they were constitutionally allowed to do otherwise.
So I don't have the answer, but I think it's something
all contracts
worth addressing.
Have terms, boy.
Well, I know, but that's why they purposely did that, was right. Because the Constitution seemed to prohibit it.
But
otherwise,
I think it would give clarity to folks similarly situated as Mr. Henderson or as Representative Coleman has identified, not those within contiguous to a city or other options, but okay, they've built a cabin someplace, and this is not just in Salt Lake County, it happens elsewhere, right? So now, is an entity obligated now to serve them in perpetuity, although that's the cost of that provision, right? So if it was easy in 2014 and now 100 years later the system's changed and they're coming off a different resource because that source dried up, do they have to continue to service that one? I don't think we need to bind them that way, but on the other hand, we don't want anything at the whim of the next administrator or an argument flares up and they say, you know, I think some of the things I've read in the paper is a staff member, maybe out of turn, might have said, well, we could always cut you off. I don't think an individual who relies on a water supply like that shouldn't feel at risk or at least have some sort of protections. But it needs to be something less than the service area.
Contracts protect both sides. The customer has protections on the contract, too. And I'll give you a classic example. Roosevelt, you know, the Johnson water system dispute we have out in the valley. Supposedly the theory was there, the city didn't want to go out there until it developed enough. So there was some horse trading going on between the district and city, and it was by contract.
But let me give you another example. If what comes out of a statute here or otherwise, if it presents too much risk to cities, you wouldn't have any cabins in Big Cottonwood. You wouldn't have any of these people. You know, they wouldn't have had that opportunity. That would have been deprived of them of a city saying, well, sure, we'll enter into an agreement. So I think those that are, you know, in this room or listening in or paying attention to this issue need to recognize there would be nothing but dry lots with zero cabins if there hadn't been the ability with some flexibility of entering into these contractual relationships on a kind of a single lot basis. So I'll just leave it at that.
So,
and my understanding is that, and I don't have the background on this that Tom and many of the others do. My understanding is that a lot of these are in fact surplus water contracts, meaning we have extra water today. We're happy to let you use it today. But if tomorrow, due to drought, due to development, due to whatever it is, we may not have the surplus water. And if we don't, we can't. So I agree with you that the rights of the parties are reflected by the contract, but that contract will govern their rights. So whatever the contract is, that's what they can bargain for.
And that's what the financial people will have to rely on. They'll look at the contract. The cabin guy may not be able to get money if, in fact, the contract says it can be pulled out any day.
The problem we're trying to solve here is each water customer knows what they can count on. And so this fixes those that are within the city boundaries or within the designated service area. It allows for wholesale contracts. This section 14 only deals with the designated service area.
Basically,
maybe we need another paragraph after that says a city can also deliver water by contract to
outside of its designated service
area. To entities outside its designated service area, but
well, and I think
only,
that
only if it notifies that what the term is, that the term is not perpetual.
Yeah.
I think he created this section 14 that has all these provisions in it, and I think that was one of the ones that was in there.
Can you find that, David?
And I would add, if we do go down the route of forcing the cities in this third case of, you know, contracting and requiring cities, putting them in a position where it's a perpetual contract or anything that could be interpreted that way, again, I encourage the group, and I've said this multiple times, to think outside of just the Salt Lake example. We keep
right.
circling back around to Salt Lake, but there's lots of other cities that do this, and probably the more common, one of the more common scenarios is an adjacent city developer comes in and says, hey, I want to develop a certain number of lots next to another city, and the city that they're really in hasn't developed out that far. It's back to the example you
right.
were just giving. This is a very common problem, and they go to the adjoining city and say, yeah, we'll service 40 lots for, you know, 5 years until Springville or whatever, you know, joins up. And yet that might not happen in the 5 years, but at some point the adjoining city, you know, Provo does this with Orem and with Springville, other cities, and sometimes those cities don't get to the development stage as soon as they think. And I think you're going to put a city in a very uncomfortable position if you mandate a requirement of perpetual water service once they contract for that. Because we're going to say no from the get-go,
yeah.
and you're going to close down development in a lot of areas. And again, think of central southern Utah, even northern Utah, where you get small cities. You get development in the county outside of that, and the city says, yeah, we'll service a county resident. You know, but again, if that's a perpetual requirement, they're going to start saying no to everything.
I agree, and that's why only thing I think is important is just have a contract. The contract has to be negotiated.
And I think it's reasonable. I think that's a reasonable approach. But if somebody's going to question, hey, are we going to force the city to do, once that contract's in place, we're going to require that city to do it forever, I think the cities are going to say, forget it.
The contract dictates terms and length of time and everything else. So
I agree with David that city just needs to define what it is that it's offering. It can deliver water outside its designated service area. It can it ought to notify them what the term is so that the customer knows it's not perpetual. Within the designated service area, it ought to be perpetual. And then that would leave the division of drinking water with a dilemma. In the case that David explained in Roosevelt or rural Utah, where a developer develops a mile away from a city boundary, and the plan is for that city in 5, 10, 15 years to pick up the service when it expands. But in the meantime, it gets a contract with City B for 5 years with renewable five-year contracts. How would the Division of Drinking Water approve that subdivision without a perpetual water supply? Or and maybe those customers would have an agreement with City A that within blank years it plans to include them in its designated service area. But again, I think the city needs to have the flexibility to do any of these different variations.
Yeah. And in some cases, Richard, they may have an option to say, well, we don't want to drill a well. You know, rural Utah sees this all the time where they say, hey, there's a large service line, transmission line for a city that runs right in front of my house, but I'm not inside the city boundary. Can I connect to that? And they could say, yeah, for a time being, we're probably okay with that. But if the city grew to the point where we said, hey, we're going to have to cut that water service off, then they may have to go back to, well, I'm going to drill a well, or, you know.
Maybe.
You know, there may be other things. But
to create their own.
Right, so their own source.
So I think basically the consensus is we would need a contract outside the service area of some kind.
And does contract law, as a term, does it, you know, by... Is it required to have a term and those sorts of things in it?
Yes. Yeah. I would intentionally leave it a little.
The city attorney ought to be smart enough to put the right things
in. I would leave it open because, you know, you will have situations where you get into promissory estoppel and other things. And frankly, I think that's beyond the scope of what we're looking for. We're just looking for contracts. Some type of protection, as Richard says.
In agreement, but I think one other very important piece is there. Whether it's a city or under the city example, that source may dry up. And so then the option is, okay, we found another source that's much more efficient, and now to resume that use of that source to now serve that one cabin that was allowed to be connected to it suddenly becomes this very expensive proposition. So under the contract to say, you know, allowing... Not requiring now that city to continue to serve.
That's all dealt with in contract law.
Yeah.
It's maybe a material change, you know, in doctrine and possibility. There's all sorts of.
But I just wouldn't want a statute like
this. We don't want to deprive your attorney of revenue
to where it abuses those types of obligations, which are just ridiculous. So
Paul, are you suggesting that in addition to what Fred has in paragraph 14, which I agree as I reread it, looks like it's addressing
the service
within the designated water service area. You'd want another provision that says beyond the service area.
I don't want to eliminate the concept of the surplus water being provided outside that designated service area.
Provided as a contract.
As long as there's a contractual basis.
Does that need to be a statutory reference?
And I was thinking of C, but it only refers to other municipalities.
That's what I was thinking. So that I don't think he's addressed it because it makes it simpler to just say, all of my city, you're only going to provide water within your service area. But I just don't know that that's realistic.
I the thing is, I don't know that the statute needs to require
or needs
a contract or needs to authorize it because the Constitution is going to authorize you to supply water outside your boundary. And the existing 10.8.14 authorizes you to sell a surplus outside your boundary. But I think if it brings a little bit of closure, we can look at the idea of a mandatory contract because you shouldn't be really doing it without a contract anyway. But
I'm not saying I have language. I'm just saying that's the concept I think we ought to.
So I don't know that it's required, but it might help close some of the concerns. The only concern I have is if you create one section that says you shall have a contract, then the inclination is going to be for somebody to start adding the things that contract.
Well, what if instead of a shall, what if it just says you beyond your inhabitants and the designated service area, you may by contract extend water. Just an offer.
Something of that nature.
So I like that.
That would be fine.
So we need to go back and look at that. But yeah, it's something like that.
Can I just make a suggestion?
Sure.
Having written a lot of contracts, I urge you to have some provision as to the ability to terminate that contract with specificity. So if the urban area has grown, there's a more efficient system that could go ahead if they didn't have that obligation under the contract or other things that could be spelled out. Because my worry is if you say there may be a contract and you don't provide how a municipality could end that contract, you're going to simply have a lot of litigation.
Yeah, how much detail we need to put into the statute, I'm not sure. Pat, you do a lot more of that work than I do.
Paul, is your suggestion that, you know, assume for a second Roosevelt City wants to provide water outside of Roosevelt City boundaries, that they have to have a contract in place with each and every retail water user, each and every connection?
Not if they're in the designated water service area, right?
That's the question. If they're outside of the corporate boundaries of the city, do we now, is the thinking now that you have to have a contract in place with each and every one of the connections?
If they're not within the designated service area, and the thing is, let's face it, a lot of times you aren't making those contracts with the individual homes, you're doing it with the homeowners association or a developer on behalf of that will be inherited by the homeowners association.
But what I understand is we're really talking about three categories.
Yeah.
City inhabitants.
That's what we need to have.
Designated service area.
Right.
And then we're talking about a third category, which is individual contracts.
But they choose not to put in
the outside the designated service area.
Or Tate does it all the time.
That's a very important distinction that needs to be made.
Yeah, Tate does that all the time.
Right, within the designated water service area, I think the expectation is the city will, by ordinance, declare the designated service area, which may include land outside the city. Within that area, everybody's treated the same. You come in, you sign up for service, and you follow that rule. But if you're somebody who's getting either retail or wholesale service outside of wholesale service always, but if you're a retail customer and somehow outside of that area, then we're talking about individual contracts outside of that area. But you're right, we need to be very clear about inside versus outside of the service area. Thanks, Scott.
And the designated service area doesn't have to include all the city boundaries. An example would be Draper City, where there's a private company serving half the city, and so in the case of Draper, it could have a designated service area for half of its city boundaries, and then an area outside its boundaries.
Yeah, it's served by water problem.
Let's see.
Yeah, we actually provide some in Sandy. I don't want to be in this service area.
Yes.
Doesn't there need to be some kind of a control if you're going to specify that you can contract outside the service area for surplus water? What is the control mechanism from an entity that has a monopoly on the water? You have no other place to go from putting any term that they just feel like in the contract because they either like you or don't like you or want you. You don't really want you there. I mean, I don't think that is appropriate for a water provider to be basically controlling development like that. I mean, that just isn't an appropriate way.
You're assuming you have no other options.
That's right. Well, we don't.
Well, you could. They're just very expensive options. You could run a pipeline all the way up the canyon and buy water down in the valley and pump it up there.
Oh, but I'm sure very it would expensive. Be embroiled in lawsuits for
It wouldn't be easily
for
done.
Decades.
No, I'm just saying you can't force a city to enter into a contract with you to provide water. Okay?
No, but that's... The city is ending up being essentially a utility for that because they own a monopoly on the water up there. And you're basically saying to them, well, it's a free-for-all if it's a contract. Then it's whatever the city wants to do as far as how the terms of that contract and all that. And I just don't think that's appropriate. When you've got a monopoly on the water, there has to be some mechanism for control.
So it doesn't... I understand that the answer doesn't make you any more comfortable, but we need to be very clear about the difference between a monopoly for a service provider versus a monopoly based on ownership of a resource, okay? But they're different. I mean, a monopoly, because you are the only service provider, is different than somebody who owns the resource and the other people want access to the resource. And you just can't make the same... You don't get to say that you're entitled to the same rights to somebody who owns the resource that you might say to somebody who is the only provider of a particular service.
I see it as they're the same thing.
I know
that there's a distinction legally. I'm just saying, from the end user's perspective, they're basically the same thing. You have a monopoly. You've got when you're in Salt Lake City, you can't go find somebody else to provide you water. You got to go to that.
Well, there's no question within the designated service area, they have their pretty much a monopoly within the designated service area.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fine. That's what is needed.
And the same thing applies outside the service area in certain locations. And up the canyons and in the Wasatch are one of those locations.
Well, I think one thing that maybe going back to what the state ombudsman had to mention is Utah is not going to be New England. We're not going to have wall-to-wall cities across this entire state. One of the resources limiting factors is the resource of water. There are going to be dry lots, dry landscape throughout Utah, and that's part of what you see in Big Cottonwood and Little Cottonwood. And someone that buys a dry lot has a dry lot and should expect to have a dry lot. They may or may not be able to get water to it. And if that rubs against someone's expectations, I'm quoting the ombudsman in that, it's not what someone expects or desires. It's if it's a dry lot, it's a dry lot if and until they acquire water, and they cannot compel someone else to sell their resources, as Mark has mentioned. So I think, Norm, you sought something different here. You know, you're seeking to acquire water to your dry lot, or others are seeking that. Well, individuals are seeking to do that in the Cottonwood Canyons. It could be near Kanab or Roosevelt. It's going to be a limiting resource, and so we lay out the framework, and we're transparent around that. And I think making sure that people understand that, creating equal opportunity, but also understanding of what the limitations of a piece of property is, or limitations of development. And the legislation that's being proposed provides some clarity to that, but it's not going to change the fact of creating more water or getting making lots that were undevelopable developable all of a sudden.
That's not what I'm getting at.
Maybe we should move on then.
We don't want the legislature dictating the terms of the contract. I understand that you may want to put some sideboards on it, like Pat suggested on termination and other things. And I leave that to guys like him to come with some language. But the reality is you don't want to get in too much, because by the very nature of contract, it deals with unique situations. And every cabin out there, every house has a unique situation. And you want to maintain enough flexibility that people can meet the needs. Obviously, if a city's out there and they're only giving contracts to favorite people and not favorite people, then you have a whole different issues. But that's that other committee that's dealing with those canyon issues and that. So, but I think that sort of deals with that. So I just think it's time to move on with that.
Are we ready for a motion on this concept? Before we move on to rate setting?
So yeah. As long as we're talking about concepts, because we're not ready to commit to language.
No.
Well, the second part of what I'd like to discuss is who's going to put together language. At some point here, we're going to have to stop talking about it and start doing something.
I'm ready to make a conceptual motion.
Okay.
On the issue of water supply, and what customers can count on, my motion is that we adopt in concept the top half of page 2 from Fred's recommended language from 14A through 14D Romanet 2, so about halfway down. These are the areas.
Sorry, D2?
Yeah. Down through D2, because beyond that starts talking about water rate setting.
Right.
And through that point, B, for example, has grandfather clause for the past, all the services in the past.
I don't think we'll need that, though, if we're not talking about excluding the ability to have.
See, we don't need that, because we're going to actually have the other category.
Okay, so without B, and then C includes the option of municipalities entering wholesale or supplying service to retail customers, D, or wholesale, and D is the retail service within the designated service area, and D1 is the method, the legislative process the city must formally adopt it, and D2 is the area that says it, those service in that area is permanent water service. And then, so my motion is that in concept we adopt that language except for B, and then we also devise a new paragraph in a section to follow that says the city may provide water service by contract outside its designated service area. And that would all be conceptual language for us to work on at our next meeting.
So I'm prepared to second that motion. I want to add one bit of clarification that we may or may want to address this. You know, a water supplier is required to submit a plan, at least the state engineer, when we're doing an appropriation certification of water rights, saying the water supply needs for the future, a reasonable future supply of the public. So if I am a water provider and now my plan suddenly does not plan for those, I guess that's back to the contract law. If an individual property wants to have perpetual ability, or suddenly the next master plan of that city is not going to provide water to those entities. But that's the point of this long discussion we had, is not to define
the. I wouldn't combine that with this motion. I'd make that a separate idea.
I would just
keep his motion.
I intentionally left the water right issue separate.
I think so too. I just wanted.
And I think it's that covered in this last paragraph, Romanette 6, that Fred has presented.
Right. Okay. So that's. I would second Richard as he was done.
Can I make sure that, does the motion include the use of the word perpetual basis?
Where is that?
Yes.
Paragraph
D2. Why perpetual and why not just the same basis?
Well, I think that we'll have to hammer that out. I agree.
This is just a motion for the language. We're not adopting the language.
That's a very loaded term.
Yeah, it does need to be on the same terms.
You're suggesting that it would just be on the same basis as it does for residential customers, as opposed to perpetual.
That might be. That's might even better, because it's perpetual doesn't mean the same water quality, the same fire flow, just on an equal or same.
So can I
an equal basis is okay.
Can I ask a question for my clarification? So are we saying that we are going to bind the city in the designated service areas that may be outside of their boundaries? When you use the word same, are you saying the same charges, the same rate also?
No, the same supply.
Okay, I just want to make sure. When you say same, what does that mean?
So that's why he addressed perpetual. He was just mainly looking at the concept.
That may be why.
I'm as concerned about the word same as
perpetual. I agree, and I think Scott is right. We need to find the right terms. And I don't have the right words right now, but I think we understand.
And I'm still supportive of the motion as Richard. I think these are some details that need to be worked out, because we're talking about a concept here.
Well, and if we're approving the concepts in those paragraphs without necessarily approving this language, then maybe that's
okay. Dave's comment's spot on that we need to make sure it doesn't inadvertently include that. And I think the language that Mark and others have provided gives us a path under a separate
I
want to make sure that the city's ability to enact ordinances as they see fit, understand that the ordinances are being passed by the legislative body of the city, who are elected officials. That what you don't want to do is get in a position where the state legislature is denying your common voter the ability to articulate a concern through their elected representatives. You got to be careful with that.
But
so if the legislation allows for an ordinance to be passed that puts out of city boundary retail connections on the same, on an equal footing as in city connections, fine. That is an authorization for an ordinance to be passed. Whereas if you're saying, boom, this is how it has to be, you're essentially taking the right that is vested in a common local voter to A, have their elected officials speak to local issues.
I think we just want to make sure everyone's treated the same, Scott. In the sense that
if
there's a drought, everyone cuts back about pro way.
So they're okay.
But I fully understand your concern.
But Scott, can you think of a city that would want to reserve the right to stop service all of its residents?
I can think of no, Richard. To answer your question bluntly, no. However, I do see a city having an ability to amend its designated water service area for things like, a new provider comes in who can do it on a different basis or from a different source, so on and so forth. That's, bottom line is and the case law is extremely clear on this, that cities are, and special service districts or whatever, are the masters of their own resources, and they are charged with holding those resources in trust for the future needs of the public. We can't tie their hands to do that. So the ability for a city to have an ordinance going forward is very, very important. And I'm just making the point that you know, I don't want us to adopt specific language that Fred has done a nice job in starting as gospel.
Okay, can I clarify what my motion is?
Sure, please restate your motion.
My motion includes the concept permanent or perpetual. And it's up for discussion next time, just for us to discuss how can we think of any circumstance where it ought to not be permanent or perpetual? Even if a city has the ability to, in a drought, to reduce its designated service area, then it's just cut loose some retail customers that thought they had a permanent water supply. And it seems to me the city could only do that if another city or some other drinking water supplier is going to pick them up as on a permanent service basis.
So your concept is that when a city creates a designated service area, they need to know that is...
That's the expectation.
That's the key concept, is we're trying to solve the issue. What becomes of water customers? What can they count on? They count on, once they get a permanent water supply, that they got a permanent water supply. The city doesn't have the ability to reduce its designated service area and cut them loose. So 10 years from now, when there's a drought and they have nothing, that's my concept.
So the one thing I want to mention that we haven't talked about yet, Fred's language includes some discussion about use of a water and designated water service area as a beneficial use, and that somehow you lose beneficial use protections under certain circumstances. I think we can't leave that language in there. We can make the obligation that you're talking about, that if you bring them in your designated water service area, that has lots of obligations to it. But we're not going to define it as a beneficial use, and then somehow you lose your beneficial use if something goes wrong with that. So I just want to remove the reference to beneficial use, but otherwise I support the motion.
Is there a reason that it's even addressed?
I think Fred's looking for a hook to make sure the city doesn't strand somebody, is my guess. And then that's a hook. But I don't think it's necessary, and I think it creates confusion.
To me, I think this is the ultimate contract when the city adopts that ordinance in the designated service area. So I don't know what they're doing.
Richard, do you want me to restate?
I'll second it.
Okay.
We got enough to at least move forward.
The motion is to adopt the following language as conceptual language for further wordsmithing through the next meeting, that a conceptual recommendation on the topic of water supply and what can water customers count on. And so the motion is to adopt Fred's recommended language
as concept,
subject to our further revisions. 14A, not including 14B, but yes, including 14C and D1 and D2, but removing references to beneficial use. And in addition, that we draft a later paragraph, say paragraph 15, that includes the language, a city can serve water outside its designated service area. A city may serve water outside its designated service area by contract.
I'll second that.
Come second?
2 seconds.
All right. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Are you voting?
Aye.
Ed? Okay. Anyone?
Aye.
Thank you. Are there any against the proposal? Okay.
So Richard, you mentioned, were you wanting to then talk a little about the rate side of that, the bottom part? Okay.
I think that's the next concept we're going to tackle.
I like that you're separating, but it's something we should be addressing. Okay.
Yeah. We definitely need to.
All right. Do we want to talk about the remainder of Fred's proposal, or jump to the agenda to talk about rates there?
I think they're sort of, I think they're the same thing. The next part of Fred's proposal deals with rates. He's trying to address, if there's a dispute in rates and you're not being treated fairly, he wants to give you a right to a property rights ombudsman.
Yeah.
There's got to be some methodology so that the issue of no taxation without representation.
Can I ask a question on that?
But I'm not sure if that's the solution or not.
Well, I don't know if
if everybody knows the answer to this, except me, then I apologize for taking your time. But what's the remedy? I mean, I live in Holiday. Holiday gets water from Jordan Valley, from Holiday Water Company, and from Salt Lake City. There are three providers. What's the remedy for someone who gets water from Jordan Valley who doesn't like the rates? What's the remedy?
They have an appointed board member.
Holiday has an appointed board member?
No. No. Jordan Valley. Is there maybe a retail customer of Jordan Valley?
Right.
Their remedy is to the Board of Trustees.
So they scream at the board, but I don't vote for anybody on the board. Okay, so
your board's appointed, is that right?
Your board is appointed. I don't vote for them, so I can go and scream at them, but if I don't like what the board does, what's my remedy?
Then you go scream at the public the city that nominated them, so that when their term comes up, the city chooses someone who will.
So does Holiday appoint a board member?
No, the governor appoints, but the nominations.
Holiday does have input as
the nominations come from Holiday, South Salt Lake, other areas where. In scattered areas through Salt Lake Valley, where Jordan Valley has retail customers.
Well, I'm just using this as an illustration, but because there's been a complaint that if you don't vote for them, that you have no adequate remedy. But my impression is the only one that I vote for, relative to Jordan Valley, is the governor. Right? Because if I'm really unhappy, I can go scream at the governor, or I can go to court.
But no, but I think the best remedy is a city. Demanding that its trustee on the Jordan Valley Board communicate frequently with the city and do what and accomplish the city's important needs.
But the city doesn't have appointing authority.
They don't, but they at the end of that term, they have the authority to make sure he can't be appointed because the governor can only appoint nominees from the cities. In that division.
So they send in nominations and the governor is limited to that list.
The governor makes the appointment. Okay. So it used to be the court used to appoint.
Two names.
Conservancy
the governor can only appoint one of those two.
Richard, isn't it true though, and I may be off here, but some of the board appointments, and Jordan Valley not unique, we're picking on Jordan Valley.
I'm just using
that
as an example.
I think this is the case in many of the districts where board members sometimes represent multiple cities. So
yes.
You know, I'm familiar with Draper, and I think Riverton or somebody else Midvale mm-hmm. shared a representative.
Right.
So we even the city has a limited ability in the recommendation because we're sharing a nomination.
It could, yes, because the divisions are normally averaged by population. So small cities, oftentimes there would be two or three. Who have one trustee. So you're right. It's a little more diluted.
And again, I think it's important to acknowledge this is not unique to Jordan Valley. Central Utah Water has a very similar situation. There's many, many districts. Well, there's not a lot of districts in Utah, but the districts, the districts largely have a similar issue that we're talking about.
Is district representation, your board, is that defined by statute or is it just...
Every district is unique and it sets out how they're governed. The conservancy districts are appointed boards. Improvement districts are usually elected boards.
Okay.
It just depends on the type of district.
I guess I'm looking at, maybe as we look at rates and then the length, I'm looking at the language that Mark provided in terms of representation and of cities providing water outside their service area, that issue of representation of those retail customers outside their service area, seems that the framework established for districts might also be suitable for, I think as we try to capture in some fashion here, Mark, the representation of those for those that serve.
So I haven't sent that to everybody. We can talk about that when we get there, but I haven't sent that to everybody.
Yeah. The special service districts, they have administrative control boards that are appointed, and they give input. Because they fall under the jurisdiction of the creating entity, ultimately. But there's different ways to deal with the district laws. Each district is sort of unique.
Districts are different animals under the legislative authority. And I think what we're trying to accomplish here is begins with the Constitution and cities having limited authority to do things with water. We're trying to fix it by the Constitution and the statute. I think that's the direction we should go, solve that for cities,
leave districts alone.
I think you're just trying to point out that...
I agree. I move that we don't...
There isn't one vote for every water connection anywhere.
No, the only thing I was pointing out is that if there's a frustration with people having input,
yeah,
either as to the adoption of the rates or remedies after the rates are adopted, I don't know why those provisions should be any different because the water provider is a city versus a non-city.
Yeah.
That's my point.
They already are.
Yeah.
And that's just not an issue that I'm willing to take on.
No, and I'm not suggesting we change
anything. No, that's not what we're suggesting. There's a difference, then. Because literally, the retail service that Jordan Valley provides to your area, and fortunately you're on the Holiday Water System much better, but just a plug for my client. But the reality is, your members and the customers of that district, okay, and you have as much say as any other customer, retail customer in that system. And whether their governing structure is appointed or elected, you have the same as anybody else in that area. The difference in the cities and the designated service area is that the city has an elected city council that's elected only by those individuals within its political boundaries. And the other service recipients that live in the designated service area, they don't vote for those city council members. They have no input into that at all. And that's the disconnect that we're trying to solve in the next solution to deal with it. Now, I would like to say that the districts always had the same rates for everyone. They treated everyone the exact same, but I don't know if that's the case. I don't know if they had that. I do know cities have definite different rates for those who live within the boundaries and those who live without. And that's because of taxation and other issues that I'm not getting into.
What I was taking from Lynn's dialogue and pushing forward, I think there's something to be gained from the example that works for districts and where a city, at least to the degree that they're providing water outside their service areas, is performing a function like a district might, who has different types of representation. The part that I think works for the entities that I've worked for or with as a consultant would be to have a form of representation. You know, Mark, it took a really good stab at some language that says having for those cities who provide whose water service area extends beyond their city limits, they shall have some sort of a governing board. Mark will correct me, whatever I get wrong here. Advisory board, I'll
you
say,
will.
That advises upon rates, capital improvements, and infrastructure to these issues that Representative Coleman was speaking to in terms of transparency, representation, accountability, taking care of the infrastructure. That advisory board then has a ratio of representation, if it serves outside its city limits, that includes representation of that, I'll say that class. And when I say that class, I mean,
yeah,
I'll use the example that you gave, Richard, where, as you and Dave were saying, Draper and I think Midvale might have one representative. But if you service 27 different entities, it doesn't, logistically, having 27 members and someone who represents 300 people having the same vote as someone who represents 30,000 doesn't make sense.
Right.
I think the language that I saw Mark putting together kind of lent it to where if I, for Sandy City, we service several, we call them islands of areas that are not incorporated into the city. We used to have some that we served that were in Salt Lake City service area. Having one representative covering all of those, because as a percentage, that's about the size, but it's not like that person lives in that community. They kind of represent that broader group. For the point of making proposals for concept that others can go provide language to, I'd like to get through that discussion here on this one that I'm proffering that for entities that serve outside their service area, or cities, that they have an advisory board. I think Mark, you had some good language to say. So reports to. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, so I did. I do want to make one clarification about that. So I think you have to, before you require an advisory board that includes out-of-city representatives, I think that there's a threshold that you should meet. If you serve a few people outside your city because they happen to be next to a line, I don't think that that justifies creation of an entire board that has outside of the mandates outside of city representation. And so we can try and figure out the details with, you know, if everybody likes the idea or not. But my idea was there's some threshold that if you don't get over that, you don't necessarily have to have the advisory board. But clearly, once you get beyond that threshold, then the people need to have a feeling that they've got input. Not a feeling, but an actual opportunity to have input and to have some kind of representation, even though it's really probably it's an appointed representation, not an elected representation. And so the threshold I put was 10% of your system. If you provide more than 10% of your connections outside of the city's boundaries, then you would have a mandatory board. Now, the number of people on the board would be determined by the city. We wouldn't specify that. The city would figure that out. But the board would provide input to the city council about rates, about service standards, about capital projects, stuff like that. And then depending upon what percentage of your customer base is outside of the city, the percentage of people on that board representing outside of city interests would increase. And mine's not, it's not like super detailed. My idea was, well, you'd have probably two levels. You'd have one level, you know, if you have between, say, 10 and 30% of your city, or 10 to 30% of your customers are outside of the city, and maybe a different level of representation, a higher level of representation, if you have more than 30% of your customers outside of the city. But that's just a general concept. And because we need to, getting back to what Scott said a little bit earlier, and I've thought about this a lot. I mean, when you have a legislative body making a legislative determination and voting on something, we just don't provide review of that by some board or some entity. I mean, the state legislature, when they vote on a state budget, it doesn't go to somebody else for review, right? I mean, they weighed public policy, they conducted a legislative act, and they took their vote, and then that was it. And even though I understand the concern that, hey, some of these people don't get a vote, some people outside the city don't get a vote, the point is it's still a legislative body making a legislative decision, and there's really no precedent in the law for a legislative decision to go to some kind of review board. And so to me, if you have a board that is as the number of connections outside of the city increases, has an increasing percentage of non-city residents or people who are on act on behalf of non-city residents, then you're getting at that what's trying to be accomplished there.
And if I can just, you create an interesting point, Mark, because in a lot of ways, whether it's a land use context or a tax context, if the concern is making sure that the process is fair and that there's an opportunity for people to engage in the process, there's a lot more interest and opportunity for people to engage at the rate setting process rather than the rate dispute process.
Yes,
because although there may be a lot of people who grumble, there are really very few who decide they're going to gear up and challenge it. So very few people use the remedies. But if we can broaden the engagement process at the rate setting end of it, at the front end of it, I think that provides a lot more benefit than providing some remedies at the back end that very few people will ever use.
Because we were discussing this, so Emily Lewis, for those who don't know me. So at our office of Clydesdale, Emily Lewis. So we've been discussing, too, Steve, I'm going to bring up on this discussion, Article 6, Section 28 of the Utah Constitution, which is the Ripper Clause,
right.
which states...
The infamous Ripper Clause.
Yes. The legislature shall not delegate to any special commission, private corporation, or association any power to make, supervise, or interfere with any municipal improvement, money, property, or effects, whether held in trust or otherwise, to levy taxes, to select a capital site, or to perform any municipal functions. And so if we're talking about doing an advisory board for rate making, it still probably has to sit in the advisory board.
Well, and if it advises as to the adoption of rates by the elected officials, then you're not following.
Right. But just saying it can't be like a delegated review check of a municipal board decision on rate making.
Yeah, that was one piece. I'm glad that that fits the statutory frame because that was something I didn't want to see where a board.
Super board.
Super board.
I have a simpler concept, even simpler than Mark's. Mm-hmm.
just because I'm more simple-minded, maybe. And it's...
this is on record, by the way.
Okay. And it would be to use the concept in D3 that Fred has placed, and that says that customers within the designated service area, even though they be outside the city boundaries, will have the same... may participate in the public process in the same manner as city residents. To me, that leaves, that does what Emily just read. It doesn't have the legislature dictating some new layer of legislative oversight or authority of any kind to a city. It lets the city council decide how it wants to accommodate that, because the normal way that water customers participate in the public process is they show up to city council meetings and they vocally talk. And so the those who are outside the city boundary but within the designated service area have the same ability, and the city can choose that that's their way. Or another city may say, we have so many retail customers, we want to do an advisory board to help us.
Well,
the city could choose.
Let's remind me. I think that's what exists now.
Yeah, I don't think I have that statute.
I think it exists now. I think the thing I like about the concept of the advisory board the market is presenting is it addresses, I think, the concerns I've heard from Representative Coleman and some other legislators. They want to actually see something more formalized. Mm-hmm. Now, for example...
And I do need to say one thing.
Yeah.
This concept that I described is my concept, not any group or organization.
I understand
concept.
This. It's not the league, it's an idea. Okay.
But I've read it with my administration.
but the reality is, it has the advantage that it follows up with some of what happened. But it reminds me somewhat of like on the Metro District of Salt Lake and Sandy. I don't know how many appointments Sandy has on that. Do you know?
Two.
And how much does Salt Lake have on it?
Five? Yeah.
Well, Sandy needs more appointments, by the way. But the reality is, I think if the legislature can see something like that, and there's a threshold, you know, and I agree with you, it has to be a percentage or something. That makes sense to me, but I would add another layer to that. And that is, you address the concept that if the designated service area includes other government entities, other cities,
other
for example, other municipalities, that the appointments to the advisory board ought to come from those municipalities. If for no other reason that if the residents don't like it, they can at least have remedy to their own elected officials who made the appointments.
So are you suggesting that we mirror sort of what Richard was describing, where if there's cities in the service area,
I think you would take
those
names.
Cities make recommendations?
Well, who makes the appointment to the advisory board?
That's what I'm getting at.
I think the city would.
Recommendations is one stage.
Yeah.
Decision making is the second. I don't know which you're talking about. Maybe both.
And we need to come up with classes. I think, Richard, now in your example, you've got a lot more, I think, individual entities served as opposed to number of board seats. And so and to kind of weight the votes to those population. I think whatever language we end up with, that representation shouldn't say every single city served ends up with a board appointment.
No, I understand that. I guess what I'm saying is the concept is that what you want is you want participation in the rate setting process.
Yeah.
So people have an input. And then if you really, the next step if you wanted to is we could even go to what Lincoln Fillmore did to the districts for the tax rates.
Yep.
In Senate Bill 194 2 years ago, where the appointed representative, say, I'm just throwing this out, say Holiday City appointed someone to the Salt Lake City Advisory Board. Before the rate would go up too high, that representative would have to come back and report back to the Holiday City Council and at least put it in a public hearing. Now, they can't veto it. But at least there would be an official public hearing.
And getting notice in that.
And that gets to the public, and that way, if I don't like what's happening, I can go yell at my elected officials and say, why aren't you protecting me?
Because I might not be checking the Salt Lake City public notice website.
I won't be. I won't be looking at real quick myself.
I think we can explore some options, because that's the version that Lincoln Fillmore, the legislature, established for taxing entities.
Right.
Where they're talking about a property tax increase, and they have to go and report, and they have to hold a hearing or whatever.
And so all it does is provide opportunity for dialogue. It doesn't change the decision-making authority.
No, the decision-making still remains with the legislative body.
The other version is what we were talking about with the districts earlier, and that is you give the local municipalities the ability to recommend candidates for appointment
but
to
I
the
would,
board.
But so my, they have some, my own, as some role in I would appointment. Say, I would say you combine the two, because that way it's Putin. If you did something like that, if you did, Bill on the suspension. But if you did something like that, the legislature would feel like we were being serious, and they would feel like we were addressing the issue. Well, and that would buy us time. And that's what you need, because then it would satisfy their need to look out for everybody, and then hopefully, if the cities and everyone treat everyone right, we can move forward.
So I was just tracking.
That's better than going to the PSC.
My thought is, I don't know if we're ready for a motion, but my thought is this, that those who have seen, you know, Fred's write-up, I think at least one of the substantive things that I saw in yours, Mark, that I think needs to be included, which addresses, well, for consideration, that addresses some of the other concerns I heard. I heard both Paulina and Representative Coleman talking about this transparency of the budget process, this transparency of how you're taking care of the assets.
Oh, that's the next issue, the infrastructure issue. That's on his agenda, too.
But I think I liked it because for Sandy City, we have a board. I know Salt Lake City has a board. I know every district has a board that seems to work. So I was thinking this, Mark, I'm just going to quote from what you sent out. So if a municipality adopts an ordinance creating a designated water service area that includes retail service to areas outside the municipality's boundaries, that municipality shall establish a board, commission, or committee to make recommendations to the legislative body for water rates, capital projects, and other water service standards. And then it goes into if more than 10% of the municipality.
The
kind of the details. But I think taking that piece and joining that with Fred's, you know, in concept, I think that's
Romanet 3, right?
Yeah, Roman 3. I think that, you know, getting someone working on some actual wordsmithing on that would be good. I can make that as a motion, or if people want to talk about it more.
I'd be interested to know what the league thinks. Would the cities, How many cities are there in towns? 200, 300? Do they really all want to have this requirement that there be they create an advisory?
Well, this is why we have a threshold.
Yeah, only a certain threshold. Like
for size of the city.
Yeah, but
right?
What if there's a
size of your customer base?
Yeah. What if there's a city of population, you know, it has
500.
Population of 1,100, so they're just barely a city, and so they have 300, they have 250 connections, and they have 25
outside.
Yeah. They have to do this. It seems
it becomes heavy-handed to
burdensome.
Me. Yeah,
we could talk about, you know, excluding cities of a certain size, a certain class from that requirement. So either 10%, or you have to be at least a third-class city or something. I have to go back and look.
Well, and maybe
we can look at that as part of this discussion.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm over or under appreciating what Representative Coleman had mentioned. I think it's good policy whether you serve outside your municipal boundaries or not, and no matter what size you are, there ought to be in the rate setting process some reporting on the condition of your facilities, your capital needs, and something that becomes transparent to the public that you represent. And I don't care whether you're 500 people or 500,000, I think that's good. And maybe marrying that with, I guess, leaving it to Fred and Mark's language to deciding if that needs to be a board or just the same process.
That's why
I like what you're saying, Richard, though. We don't want to create burdensome government. You know, if we can create efficient government that still address those issues that Pauline and Representative Coleman
identified. Limitations. Another limitation you might look at, to be honest, is that if the city is charging the same rate,
well, that
then there's no need for it.
It's only when you get
into the disparity.
But no, I heard another part that you're still reporting an accountability, or was the issue more the accountability and that you're siphoning money out of that outside service?
No, see, you're getting into the next issue. I'm talking about just rates and rates.
So, Richard, I think that's a good point we should discuss. I don't think we can come up with an answer right now. Another answer instead of a class of city might be a customer base. You have to have at least 500 customers, because that's what triggers provision of drinking water sizing standards. So once you hit 500, if you've got more than 10%, but we can go and look at that.
There's a definition for retail water system.
Part of that.
In 19, it says 500. You have to have 500 connections.
I have to reinforce Richard's point, because I've been sitting here just stewing, because again, I hate to, you know, I know Lynn walked out of the room, but
he's back.
Be careful. So I'm just trying to figure out how much of this again is just, you know, directed because we've got an issue with Salt Lake versus, hey, we've got 250 other cities in the state, and are we putting a burden on these other cities for really no reason? How many issues do we have in, you know, Fillmore? They're serving probably 3 or 4 dozen residents outside their city boundaries. And even at the 10% ratio, we're going to throw a lot of cities into that bucket. And there's really not a dispute about rates or anything else. Yes, I agree there's probably a need to report about the water system and then transparency. I understand that. But generally, that's a requirement for your staff. You've got a city engineer or somebody, that's a burden that should be placed on staff to report that. And,
yeah,
and I think we need to be careful and at least a couple of layers of requirements before we say you're going to have to go to this expense and time to create a board.
No, I think that we all understand there has to be a cutoff somewhere. It makes sense because, to be honest, if you have an outside service area and you charge everyone the exact same, why have a committee? There's no need. It's when you're starting to get into the definitions of flat B toy where you have to justify it.
Differential rate.
Right.
So, Dave, I think just listening here, now I'm inerring to, you know, Article 3 under Fred's language that just creates this broad thing that lets, if I'm inside a city or outside the city to serve that, well, I need to be able to participate in that process, and this explicitly allows that. I'm very curious if that's addressing everything that Paulina and Representative Coleman were seeking. I mean, there were some other tenets in terms of...
I think the representative would feel better about at least some possibility of an advisory board if you're at a certain point in time. And frankly, if it's limited to just class 1 and 2 cities, that may be where we start. Well, it wouldn't be the first time the statute's limited to certain classes.
So I would put this out as a proposal right now that we, you know, if we're going to move forward with some language, that Article 3 from Fred would be the one we suggest. And if there's an interest of taking additional board requirement, that's one of those that we say additional study would be useful to get input from the body of towns and cities in Utah. Well, and let's not enact something now until we get...
Well, I can't speak for the league, but they will need to dialogue in turn.
Sure.
But they can get back to us.
Okay.
Aren't our recommendations due the end of next month?
So yeah, we're running out of time.
We have time for them to get back to us. Their big meeting is...
So then a threshold, like Mark said,
September. We can figure out what the threshold is.
Yeah,
it'd be nice to have some feedback from the league on this.
Yeah. But I'm guessing that they'd wrestle with, if you're talking about leaving out small cities because this is an unfair burden, everybody gets that. So it's just a question of where you draw that cutoff. Cities above a certain size, if they have the threshold of customers outside their boundaries.
I'll tell you the danger of Fred's language. Just from my perspective, in that it says customers living in a designated service area may participate in the public process in the same manner as municipal residents within the ordinances. I could see some radical people going out and saying, I want to vote on this thing.
Yeah,
you got to treat me the same.
Now, Fred's point was, in any city, there are many water customers who don't live within the boundaries that own businesses.
I just think it's dangerous language.
And so the mix of how they participate in the rate setting process and how the residents do, that'd be the same methodology in outside the city boundaries.
I think we acknowledge that we're not adopting the language.
No, I think the league ought to look at is, I think we ought to have this 3-tier concept. You can have general language, like we're talking about with Fred, You can have an advisory board, sort of concept like Mark's talking about. And then you could have another layer of similar to Lincoln Fillmore's approach of reporting back to other cities within your service area. And I'm just saying, you take a look at all three concepts, and we ought to ask the representative, to what extent is she going to want one or two or one? And I'm happy to take that. I'll talk to Representative Coleman about that, see where she's at. So you can talk to the league, and I'll talk to the representative and see if we can come up with something midway.
Do we have enough to start drafting something or some options, or are we?
Well, at least I think we talk about looking at these concepts and then getting feedback and maybe trying to develop language out.
We got to talk to him, because he did the survey. I don't even know how many cities were talking about that, but he went
almost half, as I recall, 47% served water outside. 47% of those that responded
40 or 50
served water outside their boundaries.
We ought to take a look at the demographics and see how many of those are the small entities. Okay. And frankly, if they are charging everyone the same, leave them alone. Leave it alone. Like, we serve some people outside our boundary right now from Jordan Valley, like Tom mentioned, but we charge the exact same rate to them as we do everybody. So.
On this concept, we could put a placeholder and say a city may establish an advisory council or committee to
meet this requirement. They could do the following:
to assist itself and the residents in having this public participation.
So the challenge I have with both Fred's language and that language is just that I always get very concerned when we put something in the statute that we can already do.
Yeah. Right.
It scares me, and it drives me crazy both. Because it suggests that somehow the legislature either A, has all the good ideas, or B, has to tell us what to do when we can already do it on our own.
It sounds like that's what they say anyway.
I mean, it's kind of an educational process, right, to say, oh, well, these are like best practices. But if they're best practices, let's do it a different way. Let's not put it in the statute. But
you're right.
I get what you're saying.
It drives me crazy, too. I agree.
That's my concern.
Trust me, Richard did not like the idea of having to report back on taxes.
All right.
So does that...
So we may or may not have some language coming back, but for sure we're going to talk to the league.
I'll talk to them.
I think...
Go ahead.
I think we have a motion before us.
Yes.
Do you want to restate your motion?
Well, I had been hoping we were ready for some language, but I think at this point it's... Let's get some feedback from the League of Cities and Towns, respective entities, and
get that feedback back.
So, I think we should be looking to try to get some language, into Mike's hands and the legislature.
If I was going to make a motion, I would support the language that Mark put together with some sideboards, because I think that is a distinct solution.
Maybe between Paul and Lynn and Mark and whoever else you want to involve, if you feel like there's some language we can get going, I'd say go for it. Because I'm on board.
That's just a question. So what you guys are working on here has no relevance to contract water.
Contract water. The rates are set by contract.
No advisory board, no nothing.
Correct.
So it's my understanding that was part of the deal here, was to work out something reasonable for everybody, not exclude one component of this. But just my understanding.
I think what we're giving you is contract rights.
Yeah, but that's not.
Yeah,
in my opinion, that's not appropriate, because all that leaves you is the courts, and that's not where I think we were supposed to go here, or this committee was supposed to go. So
there's also that other committee I know dealing with the canyons. But I don't know if they're doing anything. So
clearly there was frustration expressed by both people who were served by the city as retail customers and those who were contract customers. And I think what's coming out of this is the ones who are retail customers are going to have more certainty the ones that are contract customers, I don't see much change yet. So
right. That may have to be a separate bill or something else.
Well, yeah, I don't know what there's going to be, but I think that's where we're at.
But if I've heard this discussion right, and I support the concepts we're talking about, but it sounds like we'd want a little bit more clarity as to or massaging of whether it's if you have an advisory board, what's the threshold for that, both in terms of number of connections, size of city, those types of things, and then the structure of the board, which is, are they recommendations, are they, and to your point, is there a required feedback from the board back to the city within the service area, kind of like Lincoln Fillmore suggested. I think if we had some chance to dialogue with the league to let them sort of figure that out, I'm guessing that we could come back at our next meeting with the proposal to do that. Endorse. What do you think, Mark?
Well, yeah. I think number three will be a little bit harder, but yeah, I think that's a good opportunity.
Is that your motion?
Is that a motion?
Yes. Motion is to defer and come back.
Is that a substitute motion?
I'm just saying, if we like the concept, I think we can endorse the concept and then give the league some time to get us the specifics of how to structure it on the three points that you mentioned.
I'll second it.
You'll second it.
Could I have the motion restated before?
No.
Well, let me tell you what I think the points are. The points are, first, what Fred has in paragraph three, the ability of a non-resident to participate in the public process.
All customers have the same opportunities of participation. Right.
So that's one. Number two is the advisory the creation of an advisory board, and what would be the thresholds of creating that board, whether it's based upon number of connections or the size of the city or both, those types of things. And then the third would be how the advisory board is structured in terms of its membership, who makes recommendations, who decides, that sort of thing. And maybe a fourth point is whether or not that advisory board has reporting responsibilities back to host communities, just in terms of furthering the dialogue, because we're trying to maximize the amount of input people have in the rate setting process, which I think is the...
Because that avoids the...
That's where they're going to have the most impact on the decision. That's
along
far
those
better.
Lines, maybe another nuance of that would be a notice. So I received some feedback this last week. We had to raise our rates, and someone said, I didn't get any notice per se. That was in their mind. And our process is to come before our city council on our budget process. However, every customer inside and outside the city gets a water bill, so maybe I'm required to give notice on my water bill.
Whatever notice
that
you
could
would
be very administratively efficient. Everyone's right. Getting equal treatment and opportunity.
Tom, I can assure you, I tell all my customers your rates are going up.
Thank you. Okay.
So is that an accurate restatement of what you want the way?
And I'm not a member of the committee, so I don't think I have the ability to.
Yes, you are. You're here for
taking
John.
It was here for Cameron.
It was for Cameron, so you're the third proxy.
All right.
I second this motion.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Ed, are you still there?
We put him to sleep?
We lost him, it sounds like.
Boy?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. You broke up there just for a second, but I'm here. Yes.
Just say aye.
Do you support the motion?
Aye.
Okay.
In concept, yes.
And that's all it is, the concept.
That's all it is.
That's as far as we've gotten, yeah.
Okay,
thank you.
Yeah.
So is that item three on the agenda? Can I check that out?
Yeah, that... In my mind, that's item three on the agenda, and we've talked about item one on the agenda.
But I do want to quickly talk about Fred's Romanet 4.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think we need to talk about it. I think we can make the motion that I think we do need to include in statute that there can be differential in water rates depending upon where you are in the system. But they need to be reasonable. And I'm not proposing Fred's language, but I do think we want to include something in the statute.
I think you're right. That would clarify
that. That a motion and a second?
So that's a motion to support the concept that we'll need to work on the language.
I'll second. That would avoid maybe some litigation.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
What about you, Ed?
Aye.
I didn't know we were in for a vote.
Are any opposed?
Okay. You can tell it's moving toward the end.
The energy's gone.
This is when you make all the good motions.
Yeah. All right. And then item two in your agenda, that got captured in Richard's motion there, the first one, because item 14, D2, equal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we got through that.
So I think we've hit all three of those items under B.
I think the other...
Do you want to discuss the things that we haven't captured in Fred's proposal? 5 and 6 down here. I know Mark talked about 6 earlier.
Beneficial?
Yes. Well, I have another recommendation. I think somehow, probably through the division of drinking water, every retail customer needs to receive a permanent water supply, water availability letter or commitment, or show that it can develop its own permanent water supply. That's probably a recommendation for rules for the division of drinking water, but we don't have that clearly stated in rules anywhere.
That a public water supplier has to produce?
No, or that every new retail customer has to show that it has permanent water supply.
Right now that all is dealt with the Board of Health. They're the ones that require the water letters.
Yeah.
But I know that Marie is looking at that issue.
Yeah. So, if anything, I would say that could be a recommendation from our group. Dale has experience on that board. And I've looked at the rules. The language is pretty...
Why didn't you solve that, Dale?
Why did you let that happen?
because there's a couple of things happening over the May that this may affect. One of which is we've been looking, and there will be new regulations coming out. They're imminent. And a redefinition of what a public drinking water system is. And I think what you're suggesting, Richard, may enter into that.
Yeah, that may be the better way to do it.
Yeah, because the problem is a lot of these subdivisions, if you will, or new developments that are receiving water from the city or some other entity, but are a standalone system with a master meter and what? Mm-hmm. And when do they meet the sizing requirements? If they don't meet it today, will they meet it in the future? I think they've worked out the details of those rules.
Here we check with Murray. The thought is that the land use jurisdictions who are approving new developments. Currently, there's nothing that tells them they have to be sure there's a permanent water supply when they approve new development. And to me, there ought to be a requirement at some level.
Let me assure you that if we put something like that in this bill, it will go nowhere. The developers will kill it and stomp on it. Best way to deal with it is let Marie finish her rulemaking, and then we can deal with it.
It could be a committee recommendation to Marie.
Yes, we can.
In rules.
Can you pass that on to the next? I think that I have one issue on the waterworks on your agenda, your last.
Okay, we're on to C.
Yeah.
Well, C, which C? Like the big C?
Can you give me an idea what that's about?
So have we passed, we're not making any recommendation on Public Service Commissioner proper rights with us, right?
I would say if we can create a process, my own recommendation is we don't go to the public ombudsman or the PSC. Let's see if this works. My own attitude would be, let's see if it works, let's see if these boards work, and then if we have a bunch of complaints, then we can go to the next step. But that next step is a major step.
It's a tough hurdle to get over.
Now, mind you, I'm only speaking that on my business, as myself, not as Paulina's substitute.
The discussions that I've heard, I know that the league does not like the ombudsman.
Okay. Yes.
These public, or these advisory bodies that you're setting up, are these considered to be public bodies?
It depends how the city sets it up.
I can answer that, at least from a legal perspective. If they're set up either by ordinance or by statute, yes, they are public bodies subject to the open meetings law, subject to grand law.
So the existing advisory board for Salt Lake City is a public body and is subject to the...
Yes. I don't know how it's set up, but if it is set up by city ordinance, yes.
Yeah.
They do public notice, so does Sandy.
Okay.
Sorry.
So do we know if the league is any closer on Waterworks? Because if we take Waterworks out of the constitutional amendment, then by statute we're going to have to... I think then the statute has to address the Waterworks issue.
So I think the concept is, so right now, just to refresh everybody's memory, that the Constitution currently says that a city cannot convey Waterworks, alienate, convey, sell Waterworks. Yeah, right, all that stuff. And the proposal is to remove that constitutional prohibition so that a city could lease, sell, alien, you know, get dispose of part of its Waterworks. And I think the sidebar on that is that statutorily, and we don't have any language right now, but we can hopefully maybe support some statutory language that would provide a little bit of regulation on that says that you only can do that in the context of a transaction with another public water supplier. Or maybe another, actually, that's probably still too broad. Probably with another, like another governmental entity, not any regular public water supplier, because it wouldn't probably apply to private water suppliers, but another, like a district, local district, another city, those would be the, you know, another governmental entity.
We could nail the definition of public water supply just to the government entities.
You're right. So to
the definition if you wanted to.
The conveyance would have to be, if you're going to convey a water work, you have to convey it to another governmental entity.
Why wouldn't it be available to water companies that are servicing large communities?
And that's an open question.
I don't know the answer to that, but I think the concern, and I'm reflecting the dialogue we've had among those with the league, because I've had discussions with them. But the concern about opening the door to the sale of waterworks was to make sure that the customers who are depending on that have a guarantee that the system is still going to be operated, maintained, and water provided. So the way they got the yes was to say, okay, we'll allow you to transfer that from A to B, provided that B is a public water provider who agrees to continue providing the water and to maintain the system. What they didn't want to do is to give that to a private entity who may not be able to make those guarantees. That's going to the very edge
that's
of what I know.
So there's the ability for irrigation districts or water districts. Those are subdivisions of the state, I believe, as opposed to a truly privatized one. And some of the history nationwide, as you've seen some where they'll, like they do with corporations, they'll buy it up and split up the assets and take their money and then leave a bunch of customers with a system that's even worse shape than it was when the private entity took it over. So if you're talking about not a city, but a water district or a water company as a subdivision of the state, I think that's what we'd be looking for. So that entity isn't for profit, it is for the customers, if you will.
Yeah, but you're making it so... I mean, Salt Lake City bought up water companies up the canyon.
I'm just talking in general.
I know. But now you're saying that now you're going to change the Constitution so they could actually give that water, but lease it back to that entity.
Not water.
You're saying that water
rights. Just like water works.
Water works.
Pipe or
I'm just saying if we make this statutory, we're going to have to define what waterworks are. Now there's a good definition in Title 59 under the tax laws that we can look at for definitions for waterworks. And I just mentioned that to you so the league can look at that definition. That's for the tax exemption status. And we'll have to then decide who you can transfer to. So those are. I just point that out because I know that's going to be part of the Constitution Subcommittee, which is what, next week? Yeah.
I agree with Mark. That needs a little more tightening up. But a city also probably needs the authority to
a city that has aging infrastructure on one side of the city and a large industry locates there, and they want to sell the aging infrastructure rather than replace it to the industry, and then they replace it themselves. Currently, I don't think the Constitution.
They can't do it, and apparently they don't. They still don't want that right.
So we need to.
So they need to sell it to districts, and then the district can sell it.
How we restrict this?
So. Yeah, I think Richard's got a point, because there could be instances where that is it advantageous to a city. But.
So I don't know if we need a motion on this, but maybe we'll just do some more work and bring something back.
Well, I just want to find out, because it goes to the constitutional issue.
Right. It dovetails with the Constitution.
That's what I'm saying.
So move to the next item on the agenda. Is that what I'm hearing, or do you want a motion?
I think that's...
I think it needs some more work before we
talk about it.
Yep.
Okay. All right. The last item was about the definition of terms. If we need to do something there.
And I just think what we're going at is, I still go back that we need to define what is retail water service. And see, there are simple definitions that we put together. They're already defined somewhat in Title 19.4. You just need to take a look at. That retail water service, I defined at that point a retail water provider. That went to the fluoride battles we had. So a wholesale water provider was defined there, but we can convert that. The reason is, I'm just saying, for the designated service area, that's why I started the meeting out with asking, are we talking about retail water service then? You see, that's what I'm saying. Those are definitionals that I was looking at. So just when we work on language, just be mindful that a lot of terms that we think are defined are really not defined anywhere in the code. Like, I don't think surplus water is defined anywhere.
I think that's under water rights.
Well, I'm not sure it is defined. And I personally don't really want to define it.
Well, that's fine. Just make the conscious decision to do it, though.
Okay. The only comment I have is, if we start defining terms, the statutory construct here will get more complex. We're not going to be able to limit it to just like fixing an individual section. We're going to have to do an entirely new section or multiple sections once we start doing that. But we need to look at that.
Well, but I guess what I would say, I haven't looked at this. Like you just said a minute ago, if we're going to authorize the sale of waterworks and let you find out waterworks, that I understand. But let's not go looking for.
No, we don't have to go.
Just let's not. If we have to have a definition, fine. But otherwise, I think it needs to.
No, that's why I asked at the beginning on the designated service area. We're talking just retail water service, so I'm going to just leave it alone.
It makes me nervous to start defining things for a couple of reasons. One is that I do think some of these issues actually do carry over to local districts and not just municipalities. If a local district serves a bunch of people outside of its area, I don't know why it shouldn't have to follow a bunch of the same things we're talking about here.
Anyway, move to the next question.
just on that point, the language they're talking about in the constitutional amendment is not referencing retail sales. It's just it authorizes cities to supply water to a designated service area.
Right, and that's fine. And like I said, I thought I'd bring it up because that's why she brought it up, just to see if there isn't. I'm more than happy to not define things because I agree there's danger in definition.
I know Paulina mentioned some definitions. Because I've been reading the statutes, I mean, many of them are defined within that. It's not like a definition section, but
no, it's just defined for the purposes of
that code.
So we ought to take a. You know, what I'm saying is, as we come up with language, we need to just be aware. And if we want to define things just for that particular section.
Just for White City?
Yeah, whatever. I'm happy to define terms for me.
Our next agenda item is adjournment, isn't it?
Well, yes. I think we need to decide who's going to take assignments. I think we approved motions that we were going to look at language and concept for these concepts. Is anybody willing to take assignments to do that?
Mark and Dave and I are all part of the league's water subgroup, so we can take up at least relative to the motion I made on the advisory board, and that's, I can take that to the league.
May I suggest that when you come up with some general language, just shoot it to me Because the representative has asked that I take a look at some of the language.
I guess the question is, so I anticipate that I'm going to be involved in some drafting. I would volunteer myself.
I did.
The question is, who else wants to do the
I'll help.
Because that just doesn't happen in the committee very well.
Right. No. But there were a couple of issues that we said we needed to take the lead. I think it was the waterworks issue and the advisory board.
Right.
We can have that discussion, and then if Mark gets designated to draft, I'm happy with that.
When we talk about the rates and then the whole Article 14 from Fred running up through D2, which is, I think you got a draft to start from.
So do we want different drafting groups for each of these items, or do we want to kind of run all of them with the same group?
Mark, I think you ought to take the first shot.
Yeah, if you're comfortable with Mark, I think.
If you're willing, yeah, I think we'll.
I mean, Steve's not here, so.
Scott, you want to be in that group?
Sure. Just put the language.
At your discretion. If you
nothing applies to districts.
You,
okay.
Like it's been said, the more if it's going to bog it down, feel free to keep me out, but I'd be happy to help if you want.
Okay.
Do you want anybody else, Mark? We got none.
Well, whoever wants to volunteer. I don't want to limit it. So if there are other people who want to be in it, I don't really care if you want to.
I'm always good at punching holes in language.
Either me or Fred.
Yeah, I kind of thought one of you.
Obviously, we need to sit and talk to
Fred. So why don't you talk to Fred and see if he wants me to talk to him or who.
Great.
And I don't know if we'll have a sit-down meeting or if we'll just do it by email.
That's fine. How are you getting done? Yeah. All right.
I could volunteer as Steve's conference.
Emily's here.
Yeah, Emily's here. I'm sure we could use the conference room.
With that, do you want to plan the next meeting?
Boy, do you have something to report tomorrow, Wednesday, Lloyd?
Yep, I'm going to report what we just did.
Yeah, planning's going to work.
But I won't take near as long as we did doing it.
No.
Do you want to check with Representative Coleman on this? Or?
Yeah. Let's give us 2 weeks.
Well, let's propose a date and then
what about
check.
What about the 28th, 2 weeks from today?
I could do in the morning that day.
I could do it.
Don't we have the task force, Boyd, the 26th?
Yes.
27th.
Yeah, 27 at 2 o'clock.
Oh, is that? I didn't get that on my calendar.
Executive Water Task Force?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. 2 p.m.
How did I miss that?
So what are we talking about?
We're talking about the 28th in the morning?
28th in the morning?
The extraterritorial group meets in the morning at 10 o'clock.
Oh.
So unless we want to meet before them or something, I'd kind of like to overlap with up to
in the afternoon.
What do you want to do?
I have another appointment at 3, but I could do like 1.
Are you talking 28th right now?
Yeah. Or is that too much?
The 29th would be better for me, for what it's worth. I mean, I could probably make it on the 28th, but I do have a little bit of a conflict that day.
What about the 29th in the morning?
I'm out all day on the 29th.
Thirty and free all day.
Tom, are you on the Provo Association tour?
Actually, I'm taking a 19-year-old off to college that day. So.
Well, if we need to do it at 1 on the 28th, I'll just. There's just another meeting I'll have to miss, but we can do that if that's going to be the best.
Let's take it.
Okay. 28th at 1 o'clock.
One p.m.
Yes.
You'll be back here. So natural resources.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll try to get this room so you don't have to go through all the crazy games to get the building.
You may as well.
All right. Thank you very much for your time.
Yes.
Yeah, I had that too.
2 o'clock.
I don't know. I didn't have that.
I didn't either.
So.
Thank you, Ed.
Thank you, you guys.
See
you later.
This is the Constitutional
Committee is.
So the next one?
Honor. How are you, Richard?
Great.
Yes, it's next Wednesday at 1:30.
Okay. Sorry. Wednesday.
I didn't have that on my calendar.
Wednesday, 1:30?
Yeah.
That's good.
I don't have that on my calendar.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Hey, that's great.
Sorry.
22nd
at 1:30.
I'm afraid it's not a big deal.